I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Noise in Brief, PR Week UK's fortnightly podcast series, where we discuss the biggest industry news stories from the past week in a bite-sized format. I'm John Harrington, editor of PR Week UK. I'm joined today by reporters Eliza Radu and Evie Barrett. Hi to you both.
Hello.
Before we get stuck in, I want to give a little plug to some upcoming PR Week conferences. We have PR Week's PharmaComs conference on 21st of March. And on the 8th and 9th of May, we host our huge PR 360 conference in Brighton, which is, you know, great fun and a lot of interesting stuff to be gleaned. Details of all our events in 2024 can be found at prweek.com. So book your place today. OK, we're going to start by looking at recent trading results from the big holding companies, and in particular, of course, on their PR divisions. Now, I promise I won't overload you with data. I recommend looking at the articles on PR Week. There's obviously a lot of information here. But very briefly, I'm going to start with Edelman. Obviously, Edelman, unlike the others, is a private company. But nevertheless, last week, the agency announced that its global revenue slid 3.7% in 2023, largely due to a fall in the US. More positively, the UK grew 3.6%. FTI Consulting's strategic comms arm grew 19.6% in Q4 and 14.8% in the full year, so fast growth there. Meanwhile, WPP's PR division recovered in the fourth quarter, end of the year with revenue up 1.4% like-for-like. Omnicom had a more difficult Q4, and IPG saw mid-single-digit growth in Q4 and in the year overall. Hopefully that's not too much data to throw at you, but I do think it's important context. So let's get into it. Evie and Eliza, firstly, what stood out for you most from these recent rounds of results?
Using the Edelman example, I think that the fact the UK seems to be pulling ahead of the US in terms of business growth is quite promising. It does feel like our industry is proving its worth over here, despite the US obviously being such a key player.
The US market for PR is much larger than the UK, which means if there's a downturn for the US, it would affect all markets. So it was quite surprising to me that they were doing quite okay in the UK.
Definitely. I'd also say it's hard not to be impressed by FTI's growth among all the negativity. I think it really shows how integral corporate comms was over consumer PR last year. Businesses were being scrutinised more than ever, and we certainly saw a lot of crises. So it makes sense that a lot of the big players put their budgets into resolving those.
So sectors such as tech, healthcare and financial services were predicted to succeed 2 years ago, but have seen quite a few budget cuts made by their clients, which is quite interesting to watch.
People do seem more optimistic for this year, which maybe at the start of the year, that's always the case. But it does feel like things are on the up, with a slight air of caution.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting point, isn't it? And we've all had conversations with people from agencies in recent weeks. And, you know, quite a lot of the time I'm asked, I'm sure you guys are asked as well, you know, what are people saying out there? And I sort of agree with that sense that there is more optimism now. The back end of last year, maybe the sort of third quarter particularly, I think there was a sense of trepidation among a lot of agency bosses. I think, you know, people were saying to me they were pitching for more things they wouldn't usually pitch for because they really wanted to get over the line in terms of their own targets. And it was a pretty fraught period. But I sort of think that maybe in the back end, the fourth quarter of last year, and this is what we saw actually with WPP and their PR division, it grew reasonably strongly or relatively strongly in the fourth quarter last year. And I certainly think we're seeing some of that sort of this year so far, really. Quite a lot of agencies say there's a lot of work out there. They're pitching a lot. But as you say, there are concerning elements too. I mean, you know, one thing we've spoken a lot about on this podcast and in PR Week is kind of margin and profitability. And with inflation still being relatively high, although nowhere near as high as it was, that's definitely something we need to bear in mind. And interestingly, you know, the figures we've spoken about so far have been very much kind of top line figures. But there's also been a dip in margin for the big groups. WPP's PR division saw a slight dip in its operating profit margin, for example. And I think pretty much all of them are in the same boat there. So that's still a big concern. But I do agree. I mean, people seem less downbeat, I would say, than they were certainly for quite a lot of last year. What do you think?
I've been hearing mixed opinions about trading in the PR industry at the moment. While some firms are struggling, others have had a really good start to the year. But like, this isn't new information to anyone. So budget cuts have been the biggest impact, just like last year. We're seeing clients reach out to small specialized agencies, and these agencies are likely to be taking the work for smaller fees.
Yeah, I've heard similar. I think those smaller agencies, like you say, are definitely seeing the benefits of being more agile, particularly in the consumer space. I found that like those newer agencies that were founded by people who are ex-big agency seem to be doing well. And it's probably because clients who are having to reduce their budgets can go from a sort of big, well-known agency to one of these smaller, newer agencies, which may have been founded by someone who used to work at their previous agency. It means they're getting sort of a similar creative approach to comms at a much lower rate.
I think the people from those bigger or mid-sized agencies might sort of say they have the scope to do things that those smaller, new agencies don't have. I mean, certainly when it comes to things like content creation and sort of budgets to invest in things and, you know, maybe investment in things like AI. Sorry to mention again the thing that we're all talking about, but there it is. And sort of other creative avenues. I know what you mean, and I can understand why they might say that, and there's probably an element of truth in it, but I don't know. I also think that sort of scale does matter a little bit with these things, and sort of those resources can also have an impact. But, you know, there's no right or wrong. There are obviously advantages and disadvantages of going with different types of agencies, but it's an interesting dynamic, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, I think, like you say, it's kind of benefits to both, which is obviously good because it means that not everyone's going for the same agencies. But yeah, pitching seems to be a big focus for a lot of people, and it seems there's a significant amount of it going on. Was there any other trends that you heard about it, Eliza?
It seems like word of mouth referrals for pitchings are becoming more prominent because clients are looking for agencies they know that can deliver. Also, there's a trend of campaign projects turning into retained brief, which is expected to be more common this year.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I think it's kind of an easy way to test the waters with a new agency and see what they can deliver before making a longer term commitment.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it, that that's happening. I mean, I did a predictions piece for the UK Top 150 Consultancies project, which is coming out in May. And one of the things I predicted about that was that we would have seen an increase in project work in 2023 because client budgets are a bit tougher. And, you know, they want to sort of try things out, not necessarily commit to as many retained briefs. It would be nice to see a situation where some of those agencies brought on for projects, if they've sort of delivered what they were expected to deliver, you know, end up getting some sort of solid retainers as a result of that. I mean, that would be a really positive trend. And fingers crossed, that's something that we'll see throughout this year. Thank you for that. Next up, we'll be talking about the big trends in PR recruitment. But first, a message from our partners.
Want to know what makes the biggest brands in the world tick? Check out Performance Marketing Unlocked. It's the podcast from PMW, sister title to Campaign Magazine, and it delves deeper into the performance side of marketing and finds out what really drives the leads, clicks, and sales behind some of the biggest brands in the world. From social media and AI to CTV and the Super Bowl, we catch up with the biggest news of the week and speak to guests from the top of the industry and at the heart of its biggest issues. Make sure to check us out at performancemarketingworld.com and follow to keep up to date with the latest Performance Marketing Unlocked episodes.
This month, PR Week has been publishing results of its recruitment report, which finds a number of things about the state of the recruitment market in PR. I urge you to take a look at it. All the articles are exclusive to PR Week knowledge subscribers. Again, I'm not going to drown you in statistics, but one headline stat is that last year saw the number of new jobs advertised in PR drop by around one third. The situation is obviously linked to trading conditions last year, as we discuss. But let's talk about recruitment. I mean, what are you both hearing about it? I mean, do you think this reduction in the number of job ads is across the board, or some roles still much more in demand? Has the situation changed so far in 2024, do you think? Or do you think it's too early to say? What do you think?
It seems like agencies are wanting to hire mid-level, which I believe has been the case for a while, particularly account managers being in demand. But from the data, it looks like these agencies aren't increasing the salaries at this level to reflect the demand, which, I mean, compared to the pay rises that we've seen for senior roles, there's been more of a jump there, particularly at the very top. So it's interesting that though they need people in these roles, they're not kind of hiking up the wages to reflect that. I can't work out why.
I've heard people mention a potential skill gap in those mid-ranking levels due to the pandemic and COVID. Mm. It could be also that account managers and directors were overpaid due to the cost of a living crisis, so there's less wiggle room to increase their wages now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think this was a really big trend, wasn't it, during the sort of peak of the sort of great resignation during the time of the COVID bounce, where a lot of people were moving around and some PR employers were paying, you know, very, very hefty wages. And I really think that there's a big aversion to that now. It strikes me that there are going to be some sort of specific roles that agencies are still paying decent amounts for. But I think they're probably loath to sort of have too many big pay rises for those roles that are sort of the kind of bread and butter foot soldiers who are, you know, absolutely crucial to the industry. But, you know, you can't really justify sort of increasing your wage bill that high. Having said that, I think, and this probably comes out in the data actually, that the kind of most junior roles, I think we saw a sort of a wage hike in those during the cost of living crisis, sort of slightly combined with the great resignation. And I think that's absolutely right. And I could imagine that there won't be much of a decline in those for obvious reasons that, you know, if you're in London, there is probably a sort of base level under which you don't really want to go if you want to have a sort of sustainable workforce, particularly given the cost of rents and generally living in the capital, let's face it. Not only London, incidentally, but I think it's sort of more prevalent here than anywhere. So I do think there's probably less, as you say, sort of wiggle room for those most junior roles. So they're probably thinking, you know, where can we sort of be a bit less keen when it comes to putting up wages? And I guess agencies are just sort of finding out where that is, while also balancing that with making sure they've got the right number of staff and the right skills. So constant balancing act.
It's a good point. And actually, one senior person in the industry who I spoke to a little while ago thought that things were kind of going to naturally progress in this way anyway, in the sense that agencies might start to form more of an hourglass shape in terms of their employee setup rather than the traditional pyramid. So for smaller agencies in particular, they said that there'll be maybe a lot of junior staff, then quite a tight waist around the account director level, and then a larger number of senior staff again. But they said this was more potentially because of AI than staff shortages.
I mean, I guess, you know, we also need to take into account when we talk about recruitment ads, the fact that there were a lot of redundancies last year. Yeah. And I think if you're an agency that was making redundancies, it's pretty unlikely you're going to have a big recruitment program going on. And yes, I know that you'll be making some appointments to specific roles, but it definitely makes things a bit complicated on that point. So yeah, it's a really interesting one. And the point about AI and the point about kind of needing to bring in these sort of really skilled experts is a really good one. And I kind of get the impression that the sort of the hourglass shape that you say is probably an ideal, in the sense that it's going to mean you're going to have a lot of junior people who presumably will be on lower salaries, kind of doing a lot of work. I mean, the danger is that you get too many junior people and actually they don't have enough guidance, and the people at the very top, they're either so specialist that they haven't really done the bread and butter stuff in a while or at all. You know, you kind of can't ignore the middle in a way. And I would caution against too much of that thinking instinctively because, you know, really, to some extent, I kind of feel that the kind of account director, account manager type roles are the sort of the people who keep this industry going in many ways. But whatever works for agencies, it's definitely a challenging time for it. Okay, I want to end on a creative note. It feels like we're having a golden age of brand collaborations, and we saw many in 2023, from Heinz and Absolut Vodka to Barbie and every brand on the planet. They keep coming. Evie, can you tell us about some recent collaborations you've seen that are out there and what you think of them?
Yeah, they do keep coming. I think they're a good way to gain attention. The main development that I've noticed more in kind of recent months, though, is that people want a collaboration that makes sense rather than being done for shock value. A good example of that change would be where Subway and Cream Egg did a collaboration last Easter, where, as you might accept, Subway was serving Cream Egg sandwiches. This year, Cream Egg's working with Domino's instead to make cookies. I don't know about you, but that sounds a lot more appealing to me. And I've seen people that I know posting on social media about the Domino's Cream Egg cookies. I imagine they'd sell quite well, unlike the Subway collaboration, which mainly got people interested because I think they're a bit repulsed by it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Domino's Cream Egg cookies. I don't quite know what to do with those words put together like that. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And it makes me think of one that seems to do quite well last year was the sort of the Absolut Vodka and Heinz one that I mentioned. And actually, I think that's in the realms of, yeah, oh, that could be interesting. You know, I don't know what it is about the idea of pasta sauce and vodka, but I'm here for it. Anyway, Eliza, what do you think? What sort of caught your attention?
I think sensational brand collaborations always do well, as the ones that you can like be present with and experience. Last year, Barbie fans had the opportunity to stay in Ken's bedroom, located in Barbie's dream house in California. I think this was a really clever move because it allowed people to experience a small part of Barbie's life, turning them into Barbie or Ken dolls. It's not something you can do every day. And in 2017, Airbnb did something similar with Lego, which I think also did really well.
I think you're right in that a collaboration doesn't always have to be a product. It can be an experience or something kind of broader. Another recent example that comes to mind is the beauty brand Charlotte Tilbury working with the Formula One Academy. That seemed to do quite well. It appeared in our Creative Hits column last week, and the author called it unexpected without being random, which I think is spot on. They're not two names that you'd traditionally put together, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about how Formula One is trying to encourage more women into motorsports, and it feels like an authentic partnership.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was an interesting one and quite a good one, really. I always think back to the Greggs Primark. It felt like that kickstarted this trend in the last couple of years. Just got people really interested in both brands. I'm starting to wonder whether the key to a good brand collaboration is to collaborate with a brand that's almost on the same level. And I don't mean in the same industry or, you know, in any way connected necessarily, but the same level of luxury or mainstream or whatever it might be.
Yeah, you need people to be interested in both brands, kind of have a bit of a shared audience for it to actually work.
Or you go the other way and you make them really extreme in that sense. And then that gets a lot of people talking about it because it's just so quirky and weird. So yeah, maybe there's no secret formula, but one for the creative prowess of our industry that is no doubt growing and is onto this. So great stuff. That's all the time we have for this episode. Noise and Brief goes live every 2 weeks. We'll look out for our longer interview-based podcast, Beyond the Noise, which comes out next week. Thank you to Eliza and to Evie for your insights. Do check out prweek.com for all the latest news and all our great events too that are coming up in 2024. Before I go, I'm going to plug two fantastic award schemes. 30 Under 30, our annual search for the young stars of UK PR, and the Purpose Awards, which recognises the best purpose-led campaigns, agencies and in-house teams. So enter both now. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you could leave a review, please, wherever you access PR Week's Noise in Brief podcast. Okay, that's all for today. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.